In the first part, we studied the basis of mysticism. In the second part, we discussed attaining the mystical consciousness. And now, although we can never really say that we have assimilated it all, we certainly have come to a point where we can at least intelligently discuss the third section, which is living the mystical way. Something reminds me that 3 years ago, I wrote the president of Stanford University after having received complaints from several students down there that they couldn't buy the Goldsmith books at Stanford. And within a week or two, the president replied and said to me that he checked the library there and he was told that there were no requests for the books, and so they didn't stock them. This book by Joel here, a parenthesis, is probably the most important book written in the 20th century. It is as important as any book that science will ever put out, or any documents by the church. It is actually a continuation of that spirit which went into the formation of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. That spirit, which was lost during the intervening years, is in this book. And if you know Joel, if you know his integrity, you know that the consciousness which wrote this book is the divine consciousness. We have here, and this would sound ridiculous to the world at large, we have here a message from the Father, delivered through the enlightened consciousness of Joel, which was a transparency for that message. And that book of the Father should be in every library around the world. Someday you can be sure that it will. In order for Joel to write to us and tell us the meaning of living the mystical way, it was necessary for him to first live that way. And having done so, he could give us a first-hand report of the meaning. Now, this is different than living the metaphysical way. For the metaphysical way in itself never becomes the mystical way. It is living by the letter. The mystical way is the complete freedom from this world, an independence which steps out of the three-dimensional world while living in it, becomes at one with the source of all life, and becomes independent of the mind, the body, the circumstances and conditions of this world, independent of normal material needs, independent of every man, every person, every so-called power and force in this world. In other words, living the mystical way is the independence that was written about in the Declaration of Independence with something added. It is not an independence from other nations. It goes deeper. It is an independence from the false human selfhood, including our own false human selfhood. It is a total freedom in Christ. When Jesus said, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up again. He was revealing something that we have never discussed, the meaning of those 3 days. You will find that the fourth dimension of consciousness, being Christ consciousness, he still had 3 more levels of consciousness to rise up to the 7th level, at which level his ascension would be complete, at which level he could come forth again. The 3 days are 3 levels of consciousness. And that will tell you then that the 6 days of creation, before the 7th day of rest, are not days. They have nothing to do with human time. They have to do with levels of consciousness. And the first level was light. God said, "Let there be light." And because God spoke in tongues, there was light. And who was that light if not you? That light was the beginning of the divine image and likeness of the Father. And really, there never was a time when that light did not exist. And from that light, all has evolved. In the 7 levels of consciousness, we come to a level which is more or less midway, the human level, the 3rd dimension of consciousness. And all of us in that 3rd dimension of consciousness, on the way to the 4th, are making the turn, the halfway point. At the midway point, we turn from the limited human consciousness to the realization that I am the light. And at this point, we discover that all of the things we had been seeking up to now are to be found in that 4th dimension of consciousness toward which we are heading. There is nothing that has been withheld from us, but rather we were separated from that which we are by a thin filament called human thought. That filament, that glass darkly, was between the human form and the divine substance. As we come out of 3D into 4D, we find a miracle. We find that in the 3rd dimension, all form is without substance. It is nothing but form walking around. It has no substance. It has no spiritual content. Just that minor degree to keep it there. And we find that 4D is the level of substance. And we discover what we have missed and why. We discover that in Eden there were 2 trees. The tree of substance and the tree of form. The tree of life and the tree of good and evil. The tree of allness and the tree of lack and limitation. The tree of reality and the tree of imitation. And now we find there is a thing called substance. And in the living of the mystical way, you live in the substance and let the form take care of itself. There is a strange thing about this substance. It is invisible manifest form. And then that invisible manifest form becomes visible tangible form. Whereas the forms of the 3rd dimension have no invisible root. They are really disembodied forms without substance, existing only in mentality. And as you reach for them and possess them, you possess the shadow. Not knowing this, we have tried to improve these forms. We have done everything we can to build those forms, to store those forms, to possess them, to contain them, to preserve them. And they were not our forms at all. They were but borrowed for the moment. Only when we have the substance of 4D do we control the form in 3D. And that makes a drastic improvement in our life. It makes the improvement we had been trying to make, but couldn't make, because without substance we merely could recreate new forms that were temporal, transient, evanescent, futile. Now, every error that you have encountered, whether it be of the mind, the body, or the emotions, or the possessions, has been a lack of the substance of four-dimensional consciousness. I know this seems like a fine time to find it out. We go so far, and then suddenly into our range of understanding comes something we feel we could have known earlier if someone had pointed it out to us. But somehow, in the divine sequence of things, the apple must fall off the tree when it is ripe. And we cannot be given certain things until we are prepared. It's as if there's a power that prevents us from receiving that which we are unprepared to receive. But as the preparation is completed, the apple of wisdom falls off the vine and we have it. If we know that fourth dimensional consciousness provides the substance, then we can learn to stop seeking in the three-dimensional realm, like a dog chasing its tail. We begin to turn our total attention on the fourth dimension, and now we know why we cannot and must not and shall not take thought for our life. Because our concept of life was this form. And while we were taking thought for it, we were putting that thought between the form and the substance which that form needed, but which we were not feeding to that form, because we did not seek that food which was the word of the Father. The tree of allness is the tree of life. And if somebody steals your fruit, it will not matter. That same tree of life will produce new fruit. There will always be an invisible crop coming forth. If someone steals your fruit in the third dimension, you may have a very barren time. Your complete crop is gone. But in the fourth dimension, nobody steals your tree. And the consciousness of substance is the tree. The consciousness of form is only the fruit. And false fruit it is. So now we're going to live in an awareness that I am the substance of God. And as that substance, all that the Father hath is mine unto eternity. I have no need from any person, from any condition, from anything. Nothing is my supplier. Like a tree, I grow my own fruit. All of it comes forth from the withinness of consciousness. Withinness unfolds to withoutness. The inner unfolds to the outer. You depend on your inner substance to unravel itself like a spider. And this inner substance is divine consciousness, and I and divine consciousness are one. This inner substance has a brain. It knoweth my needs. It goeth before me. It performeth. It perfecteth. It is the living spirit of God which I am. And there is no duality here. There is no seeking here. There is no striving here. When we sought and found the kingdom of God within, our days of seeking were over. When you find what you seek, your days of seeking are no more. And if you are still seeking, it is because you have been unwilling to accept your identity. When you have accepted your identity, what is there to seek? Son, all that I have is thine. In your identity, you have all that the Father hath, and now you're ready to live the life of independence. A gentleman said to me, the one thing that eludes me, even though I can now feel this rising within me, I can feel this essence moving forth, is that I'm seeking illumination. And that's the one thing that eludes me. I cannot find illumination. And I had to shake my head sadly and say, you never will. Well, he says, did you? I said, no, I didn't find it either. Oh, he said, I thought you found it. No, I said, I've never found illumination. But I've done one thing. I got rid of the fellow who was looking for it. I discovered that to tune in, you have to tune out. That when you tune out of this world, you don't have to seek anything, not even the light. Because in seeking the light, you are denying that you are the light. You cannot be illuminated. You are the light itself. All who seek illumination are unaware that they are the light of the Father. The real illumination is the realization that I am. When you tune out of the world of form, when you tune out of trying to find the light, lo and behold, you never had to find it, you had to accept it. For that is your name. When you are given the white stone with a new name on it, it will tell you, you are the Son of God, the light. The Father said, let there be light, and there was. And that was the perfect divine image. And nothing has changed. You are that light. It is the acceptance of the light which is the real illumination. Oh, it may take place in a physical sense after that. You may be engulfed by this transforming light. But there must first be an acceptance. We can't walk the streets hoping that this is Damascus and lightning bolts are going to strike. We prepare the way. We come out of the atheism of non-belief. Out of the atheism which says, the Father may have said I am the light, but I haven't yet realized it. We come into the faith of acceptance. And then we pass the faith of acceptance as the substance begins to move through us, revealing itself, illuminating our way. And then you discover that this light moving through you is the fourth dimensional light that governs the three dimensional form. This fourth dimensional light becomes the law of your being. It enables you to relax in the knowledge that there is no power external to your being. None. And as this awareness ascends within you, all external power, which is darkness, is met by the cold, bright light of your being. And every external power becomes a non-evil. Not an evil that you resist, but a non-evil. A non-reality. You cannot meet it mentally. You cannot meet it with willpower. You have risen to the point where there is nothing to meet. That is a difficult place, isn't it? Where there is nothing to meet. For I am that power which is the light of God. And in this light, in this self-accepted, you are living the mystical life of relaxing in the power of God, which is the non-power of the world. You are relaxing in the need for no power whatsoever. For all power is now in the self. The self that you are. You can face the pain. You can face all forms of persecution. You can face the disturbances. You can face those things which are in your mind and your body. And those things which seem external to your mind and your body, with the knowledge that God is all self. And only this transforming light of non-power needed reveals the hypnosis of error. We will coin a word or two. And the words we will coin are these. You have learned about omnipresence, omnipotence, omniscience. Now learn that there is omnipresent infinity. That the fullness, the sum total of God, which is infinity, is functioning at every point in the universe. There is no point where infinity is not present. That means the fullness of God, present at every point, is the law, the reality. And there is no power anywhere, no presence anywhere, no being, no condition, no situation, and no person who can change it. That awareness is your mystical consciousness. And that awareness is the state of consciousness which can never be hypnotized by a seeming external circumstance. It can look at the circumstance. You can still see the activities that are taking place in three dimensions. Jesus did. Jesus saw all that we saw. The difference being that while he saw them, while he saw these problems, many of which were far greater than any we have encountered, he could also see through them. The three-dimensional vision saw them, the four-dimensional vision saw through them. Saw them as what they are. And although it may be difficult to come to that conclusion, he saw them as forms without substance. And the reason he could see them as forms without substance is because he knew their substance. Their substance was the substance of God. And that substance could not become an imperfect form. He saw the filament between substance and form, the glass darkly, which prevented the pure, perfect substance from coming through into pure, perfect form, the density of human thought. He saw the world mind intervene between substance and form. He saw the individual mind hypnotized to accept that separation. But in his mystical consciousness, he knew the non-power of that world mind, the non-power of the substanceless forms that it created. He saw them as wraiths, walking, shadows. And he knew that behind them, where they were, their true substance was Christ, perfect and immaculate and eternal. And he sowed not to the form, but to the substance. Not to the flesh, but to the spirit. He lived in the tree of allness, and not the tree of good and evil. Your consciousness, when it is the tree of allness, and not the tree of good and evil, will admit no possibility of opposites, no possibility of a conflicting power to God. And knowing that infinity is omnipresent, that God stands where the problem appears, that is where you make your decision in consciousness to sow to God and not to the problem, which means you stand on the fact that only the power of God can be, and that which is not the power of God expressing must be imaginary. Totally imaginary, no matter how real it appears to the three-dimensional mind. Now, once you have developed this technique of standing in the realization of the non-reality of all that is not expressing the perfection of God, you will not try to improve the non-reality. You will realize the only hope there is for non-reality to be dissolved lies in you. You are the one hope in the universe for the person you think is suffering to come out of it. Without you, that will continue. Your illumined consciousness is the only hope there is. That is the one hope in the world for the people you love and the conditions that oppress you. Your illumined consciousness. Without it, the rest of the world and you continue in forms without substance. With it, even though it is difficult to establish, you must make that beginning, for to live the mystical way is to accept no opposite to God. None. And the place where you do not accept it is in your consciousness. I and the Father can never be two states of consciousness. Is God permitting a condition to exist that is unlike God? And if your answer is no, then the answer must follow and say, then the condition does not exist. Now, what am I going to do about it if it doesn't exist? What can you do about non-existence? You must cross it out in your consciousness. As long as it is in your consciousness, it will remain externalized. You cross non-existence out of your consciousness. Now, suppose this non-existence were a pain in your foot. How would you cross it out? You would have to stand in the courtyard as Jesus stood and in consciousness know the truth which makes you free. The truth must be that God is not coming to pick me up here and put me on a cross, and therefore no one is doing it. It isn't being done. There is no me standing here that can be put up on a cross. God wouldn't permit it. There is no me standing here that can be pained. God wouldn't permit it. If there's a me standing here in pain, it's a false identity. I must deny myself. This is a strange way to live, isn't it? To deny yourself instead of the pain. There is no me here who can have pain. The me that is feeling pain is non-existent. God would not permit pain. God would not permit suffering. God would not permit death. God would not permit avalanches to swallow up people. God would not permit tidal waves. God would not permit fires that burn people. Do you see, we are denying the false self. We're going beyond denying the fire, the flame, and the flood. We're denying the false self that is taken up in these things. And what will come of that denial? In your denial of the false self, in your dying to that false self, you are giving the light of your being an opportunity to be born. It cannot be born while there is a false you still alive. The light that you are seeking to destroy your enemies cannot rise up and dissolve the darkness, because you are standing beneath the darkness and the light. You are the obstacle. Your unwillingness to release the false self . You cannot live the mystical way in a human personality, in a human selfhood, in a self that is still governed by fear and doubt, in a self that still thinks of life in terms of birth and death. That self is the self that is in the way. That self is the self that suffers. That self is the self that sees problems external to itself and wonders, what can I do? You can never know the release of the light until the darkness of the false self is overcome. Then you discover that which you were trying to defend against, that which you were trying to avoid or improve out there, was only the evidence of your false selfhood. When Jesus died to self, the world of false selfhoods outside of him was now dead to him. It cannot be alive to you when you are dead to the false self. For now you come into a new kingdom in which the infinite substance of God is the only self. And you learn that the forms in the external are the imitation of that substance. The forms are the mental concepts we entertain about the invisible substance. The substance is life, the form is imitation of life. To be in the world and not of it, one must live in the substance, and then the form in the world will be under the government of the substance. Meanwhile, you're more concerned, of course, with the pressures of the moment. And those pressures remain only as evidence that you are still in form without substance. It's better to face this, to hear it, than not to know it and to wonder what you're going to do about the pressures. Again, you must be reminded that there are no pressures external to yourself. All pressures in this world are but the evidence, and in proportion to your separation from God, that evidence appears. If your separation is slight, the pressures are slight. If your separation from God is great, the pressures are great. And rather than pat each other on the back and tell each other how wonderful we are, the best service we can do for each other is to know the truth. When the separation from God is eliminated, by some strange magic, the pressures are eliminated too. All work is done within. Your inner and your outer are one and the same. You may not know it. You may debate it. You may wonder, how can my inner be the outer when the outer seems to be so many other people? I don't control those people. How can my inner be related to those people out there? That's exactly why we have to find a way not to live in the concepts of our human mind, because to our human mind, that seems to be an insoluble problem. The human mind sees my inner didn't make that tree grow over there, and my inner didn't make that boy over there get the mumps. And the human mind is right, it didn't. But when your inner is a different inner than a human inner, if that boy over there who has the mumps happens to be your son, you'll discover he doesn't have the mumps. And you'll discover that tree over there is influenced by your consciousness if it happens to be in your backyard. You'll discover that your inner awareness of the one self will improve your garden. You'll discover there is a relationship between your inner state of being and those things which are in relation to you. And the closer they are, the more that inner self of you will govern your relationship with those individuals and those conditions. Now you say, how can I know when I am illuminated? Or at least becoming so. And the answer Joel gives us is when you are in a state of desirelessness. When you find that there is a capacity in you to desire no improvements in the outer, no things, no conditions, no possessions. That doesn't say you're going to reject them when they come. It simply says that you have no external desire. You don't spend any of your time seeking to fulfill desires for the external. Rather, you know that if I want a tree, I'm going to plant a seed. And so I'm going to plant seeds of consciousness. Your complete direction is within. You know that as you control the inner, and then lose control of the inner and let the spirit take dominion, your outer can only be a spiritual outer. It will be a perfect manifestation of the spiritual realization within. And you're not saying to God, there's still a person out there that needs my help. You're saying to God, thank you, Father, for being the substance of my being and his being. For we are one and the same consciousness, and my form is showing that forth. His form is not, but I will rest in the truth and watch the one consciousness reveal itself in both forms. I can't influence that person if the consciousness of that person is established. But if that person happens to be a child, that consciousness is still mine. And also, if that person happens to be quite elderly, it is coming back to the child consciousness. Again, it can be your consciousness. Your consciousness becomes the governing factor when a person is too young or too old or unable to do its own work. I mean by that, it's in a coma or in a state of insanity or in a state of inabilities due to amnesia. It becomes like a child consciousness. And then as you dwell in the consciousness of reality, you will discover your consciousness becomes the governing consciousness, provided you are not exerting ill will, not trying to in any way make somebody good or well. Your consciousness must be the free flowing of the Father. In other words, you must crucify your human self-consciousness in order for your consciousness to have power. Then, without manipulation, without direction, without will, the divine will coming through you becomes the divine will. in the child or elderly person. It is the absence of you which makes this possible. That makes you a transparency for the divine. And the transcendental moves through you because now you are enlightened. And that enlightenment embraces those who have no consciousness themselves. They become your enlightened consciousness, and the will of the Father expresses in them to the need of the moment. I'm quite certain that whoever does this successfully by accepting themselves as the light and then knowing that no person has the power to direct the light, permits the light to work without the obtrusion of a human personality, will notice the power of it flowing. And then the mystical life will be expressing in the perfection of God in all things. Now, as we begin to feel substance, knowing that substance is divine, we have a tree with the strangest fruit the world has ever seen. Most trees will give one fruit and multiply that fruit. This tree bears infinite fruit and multiplies these infinite fruits infinitely. So that we are the very tree of life itself. And who would ever think of talking to a tree and saying, please give me pears or give me apricots? Who would ever think of talking to the tree of life and telling it what you want? When already you know it hath all of the Father. And this tree of life truly is your consciousness in the mystical way. And the mystical way, it really is so misnamed. It should be the realistic way, the real way, the true way, the honest way, the way it is. That's all the mystical way is, the way it is. For when you are the tree of life, the isness of God is ising as you, flowing, forming itself as harmony, peace, love, contentment, immortality. Immortality must be seen as a permanent state of consciousness which exists right now. When the form goes, this state of consciousness, this immortal consciousness, continues to unfold, to expand to infinity, if you have attained the realization of it before the form goes. If not, then the mortal consciousness comes right back to its very same limited state when the form goes. Crucifixion is a very strange word. We have all assumed that Jesus was crucified to demonstrate that there is no real death. And although that is partly true, I would like you to see something in crucifixion that may not have occurred to you, that it has many meanings. And one of them is the reenactment through the crucifixion of Jesus of exactly what you and I have already done to ourselves. We have crucified our own self. We were not successful because it still exists. But just as the world crucified Jesus unsuccessfully, we have done the same to our own self. We did it by being born. In that birth, we crucified ourselves. We were born into a sense of time and into a sense of form. And in accepting the form, we lost the substance. We didn't lose it. We lost the use of it. It still is our substance. And all those that we know and love, that substance is still their substance. Who is going to recognize that for them? Who is going to recognize that the substance of God is the substance of the individual for whom we mourn, for whom we fear, for whom we suffer pain. And do you see how in denying that substance as the substance of another, you have denied the allness of divine substance, and you have lost it for yourself. And now the blind are trying to help the blind. I hope you recognize that these are words of love. They're not words of criticism. They're words of great love. They're words which are coming to us so that we can cease being the blind who want to help the blind and accept divinity as the substance of all those whom we think need help. Accept it then as the substance of all those who are in pain, of all those who are suffering, of all those throughout the world that we think are blind, deaf, lame, halt, and withered. Accept their divinity within your consciousness. For these are the least of these, my brethren. And don't you see that unless you accept it for them, the same measure of unacceptance is meted out unto you. You have sliced a piece of God off over here and say, I have it, they don't. It isn't true. There is no place in the universe where the substance of God is not. And that substance simply has not come through an enlightened consciousness to show forth as the harmony of form. You're wasting your time trying to work on the form when you must learn to live in the substance. And the substance is not out there. Infinity, the fullness of it, is right in your consciousness. All work is done right where you are. In your living room, in your automobile, in your office. Hid in your closet is where the work is done. It is there that you accept the infinity of divine substance and thus overcome the world.